If you are an ultra runner or are thinking about doing an ultra run at some point in your life, you do not want to miss this episode. Hey there, welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Bobsy Bahar, and my awesome co-host, Dina Griffin. We are both registered dietitians who are board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We are here to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life, give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. Now, on today's episode number 125, Dina and I are sitting down and we're discussing the past, present, and future of ultra marathon aid stations. So specifically, we're chatting about how the food the buffets at these aid stations has changed over the past 20 some odd years, where we are now, and even how we think nutrition will change a little bit more at these aid stations in the future. You definitely don't want to miss this one because here's the thing. If you're thinking about racing an ultra, you have to be prepared with your nutrition. So whether you're going to carry something, if you're going to depend on the aid stations themselves, you kind of have to be prepared and you kind of need to know what's going on at these aid stations. So this is a super, super, super fantastic episode. We don't want you to miss it. Before we get to the show, though, if you are a health professional and you provide nutrition services to individuals, be sure to check out the Energy Performance Institute Metabolic Efficiency Training Specialist Certification and Mentorship Program. I created this in 2012 and recently enhanced it and updated it to include a 2-month personal mentorship with myself that focuses mostly on improving business IQ and acumen and developing revenue streams so you health professionals can earn more money for the high value that you provide your clients. So go on over to energyperformance.com. That's energyperformance.com. Click on metabolic efficiency training and you will learn more about it. And now, on to the episode. You know, Dina, I often think about the past, present, and future of many things. The sport nutrition industry, products, nutrition products, you name it. But, you know, today we're going to offer our listeners a little peek into the past, present, and future of ultra running and sports nutrition. This is going to be a fun one today.
One of my favorite areas of sport and sport nutrition, Bob, talking about this, and fun to, have some reflection and appreciate where we've come from, where we're headed, and current status.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because looking at the past, you know, I look at my upbringing in endurance sports, and let me do the math really quick. This will be year 31 that I have been an endurance athlete, and I just made myself sound so incredibly dated. It's not even funny.
Ancient.
You're ancient, right? And but here's the thing, like, and I know both of us kind of explored, kind of ended up in the ultra running world also, and this is year 19 of me doing ultra running events. And I know you're not far behind, right?
I mean, yeah, I think about 12 years. So a little bit behind, but still, I think, you know, it's enough experience for us to appreciate the evolution, so to speak, in this sport.
And that's absolutely it. So listeners, whether you've been in ultra running for a very long time or you're just kind of tipping your toe into the water right now, this is going to be a fantastic episode because we're going to take you through the past, present, and future of nutrition with ultra running. So I believe you'll probably get some great golden nuggets in terms of maybe how to navigate your training nutrition and maybe your next competition, whether it's a 50K, 50 mile, 100 mile, or 200 to 300 mile, because they're getting up there now these days, right, Dina?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And now we've got a 300 here in the States.
Yeah.
So, well, and then you've got multi-day events going for 500-600 miles.
It's basically backpacking trips, but you're going a lot faster.
Yes.
With very little sleep. You're not pitching a tent and camping, right?
Exactly.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was reflecting upon my first ultra run. It was Leadville. It was 2005. And I remember it so vividly, but I won't get into many of the details other than the nutrition part of it. And what I remember at all the aid stations is one thing. And the one thing was whole foods. Like I don't even remember any zero engineered sport nutrition products at any of the aid stations. And granted, this was 19 years ago. So a lot of the players in the market weren't even thinking about being, you know, businesses or players in the market yet. But do you remember that when you started?
I know. I was just remembering, Bob, this one aid station in particular. I mean, there was sandwiches and some candy, you know, like the gummies, gummy bears, that's what they're called.
Not gummies, but gummy bears. We didn't have those back then.
But I think there was like sport drink in one of the little cooler thingies, but there wasn't like the array of, energy gels and all those things.
That was like the basic thing, sport drink. And it was always diluted or super sweet, right? Because I just felt like back then, nobody really cared. They're like, listen, you're going to eat food. You're going to drink water. That's all you need, right? I mean, I remember the PB&J sandwiches. I remember the M&Ms, the gummy bears. My favorite was Red Vines. That was like, wow. No wonder I had so much GI distress back then. But, you know, I don't want to talk about that too much. So back in the days, right? Check that box. Really, from an energy, from a calorie standpoint, we were really looking at a lot of whole foods and not like the menus that we have today, which we'll get to. But I feel like it was the basics. It was the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It was the cut up bananas, maybe some other fruit. Definitely. I mean, I always saw M&Ms, Red Vines. You had the gummy bears. What other things, you know, I didn't really see a lot of like even trail mixes and stuff back then.
Yeah. Bananas, oranges, things like that. And then, I mean, pretty basic. I would even say it was just not, well, of course, the races I'm thinking of that I did, Bob, were fairly small. The first ones, I mean, I did Leadville as well, but like the array was not massive, you know, it's pretty simple, like 10 things at most.
Yeah. And that could be, I mean, if you think about the past and in the years that we're talking about, it could be because of budget, right? Because I mean, when I did Leadville, it was before Lifetime had purchased the race. So it was still kind of the Ken and Merrily show. And, you know, I'm sure budget was still not a concern, but it just wasn't the lavish budget that they may have or more resources. So I think that's why we didn't see that many offerings. And I'll tell you, back then, at least this is my personal perspective, I didn't rely a lot on the aid station foods because you never knew what you might get, right? I think nowadays we kind of have a better idea because race directors are publishing that information. But back then it was like, you know, aid stations, you'll have food and water. And that's all we really knew. So then you're packing a lot or your crews have a lot, right? And that's where I think we were back then is really depending on whole foods, but bringing a lot of your own types of foods because you had no idea what to expect at the aid stations other than it would be pretty basic.
Yes. I also think, Bob, like fluid wise, it was more water and soda, that kind of thing with maybe one drink, like you said, diluted or extra concentrated, but it, you know, wasn't maybe a big deal then or just wasn't featured, you know, and
less organized too. Like back then, I remember like just talking about like, you know, the Camelbacks of the world, like we didn't have those really cool packs that we have nowadays, right? So like we had hand bottles, we had some waste packs, but you know, in those days, at least in my mind, like the Camelbacks were for mountain bikers. They weren't for ultra runners because they didn't really design a lot of good ones yet back then, right? They didn't like, they weren't super comfortable to run with and everything. So yeah, I believe it was more just focusing on water and really pushing water or soda, right? And then at that point, you know, I was at least seeing a lot more increased risk of hyponatremia, which is low blood sodium. And that was a big concern with the athletes that I was working with because of just the food offerings or the lack of offerings. And, you know, kind of brings us to the next one. I never saw any electrolytes. Like there were never capsules. I mean, there were shaker bottles of salt, but that was about it. You know, I think athletes were on their own in terms of electrolytes.
Yeah, agreed. Not that, you know, I have extensive history with all of the, you know, big name ultra running races in the United States, but I know a few of them did a long time ago, maybe have that shaker of salt or some salt caps, and then they removed that for a number of reasons. But it wasn't a big focus much at all.
Yeah. So when we look at kind of back then, it was water, it was whole food, but limited whole foods and very little electrolytes or sport nutrition products, right? Yeah. So that was kind of back in the days.
Yeah.
You know, fast forward a few, you know, decades or a few years, and where are we at now? Like, I feel like it's almost like going to Las Vegas and going to a buffet sometimes at these aid stations, right?
Definitely. And even, yeah, Bob, the array of options being so much more. And I think also one benefit is awareness of unique needs. So a few of the races doing more like, okay, we've got our gluten-free options over on that table. We've got our vegan options over there. And so just having a lot more to choose from and accommodating dietary needs for the majority.
Yeah, it is pretty amazing. I mean, you do see those bigger races who are really accommodating special dietary needs, which I think is pretty cool. It's logistically, I can't imagine the race directors doing this. I mean, I thank them, but it's logistics. I can't, it must be so much work trying to do that. Cause you know, as you know, I mean, gluten-free is like, you cannot have it contaminating anything because they're probably working with some people with celiac and stuff. But, you know, I think from a calorie perspective now, here's the thing I've been seeing at these aid stations is, yes, you still have your peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and bananas and oranges, but that's like old school, right? You don't really like nobody who does that anymore, right? Although I do love peanut butter and jelly, by the way, when I run.
Yes, you do.
But nowadays, and let's just share some experiences because you and I have done different ultras. And it's like, I mean, now we're getting like avocado hummus wraps and whole wheat tortillas with some mayo or mustard. We're getting pizza. We have hard boiled eggs. We have pickles. We have potato chips. I mean, we have so much, and I will say this from experience. I remember one of the races I did a couple of years ago, and I don't know what mile it was, maybe 60-ish, 70-ish. And I rolled in and it was kind of warm. And I'm like, my eyes got so big, Dina, because I saw Pringles and I saw pickles, right? And we've joked about this a lot before, like the Pringles and pickles. But obviously I was attracted to that because my body needed sodium, right? So it was sending me the signal. But it also, like, the aid station had so many different things. And here's the other thing I've noticed. There, it's some aid stations, they're actually cooking food for you. It's almost like you're placing an order. It's kind of like a food truck, but not on wheels, a food tent.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
And made you're to like order. Placing an order. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it is gourmet, I think. And again, just considering like individual needs, the fact that a lot of race directors are more up to speed. I mean, it's not that they weren't, but just being attentive to like the weather conditions of that race and needing hot foods, more of those at the cold hours, and salty foods just as much as the other kinds of maybe more sweet foods or savory options, you know. So it's like full array. And like you said, it is kind of an upgraded Vegas buffet.
Yeah. You know, and I do think, coming back to budget, I do think that they do have a larger budget these days. And of course, it does depend on the race if it's super, super local and small versus a little bit bigger. But, you know, even registration fees, like I don't know the registration fees of some races these days, but they're at least 3 to 5 times what I paid 19 years ago. So with that comes having a little more resources. And I know obviously permit fees go up and all that goes up. I get that. But I'm just saying that the race directors, I think, are more accommodating because they do maybe have a little bit more of a budget to work with. Or here's the other thing I wanted to bring up. There are now more sport nutrition companies on the market than there were 12, 19 years ago. So now there are more choices for race directors to actually engage with sponsorships or partnerships, right? And a lot of times we see these companies actually going to these races and saying, we want to be the Nutrition Project drink, gel, gummy, like whatever, right? So I think nowadays, in addition to real food, now we almost have a confusion of sport nutrition products on courses, because I've seen a few different ones, right? I'm sure you've also, like, different products from different companies, which I think kind of confuses. It's like the peanut butter and jelly versus the avocado hummus wrap. You're like, ooh, which one should I choose, right? And it's great because it gives us as athletes choices. But I think back to my point is if you give too many choices, athletes who don't know about their body and their nutrition plan can make very poor choices. And I've been in that boat before. I've done it. Eyes are bigger than the stomach, and you think you want one thing and you grab it. A couple miles later, you are paying for it, right? So I guess there's a lesson in here, which I'll get to in a second.
I can't wait to hear what you're thinking too, because I am just reflecting on, a few recent races and almost the overwhelm aspect too, Bob. Like, amazing, you get to the aid station and there are 400 things to choose from. But it's like, at least from my experience, it was the opposite. Like, instead of taking all the things, I was like, oh my God, I don't even know what. So I'm not going to bother. I'll just have two saltines and leave it in that.
Because you don't know where to start, because literally you walk up and it does look like a buffet. And the volunteers are always so happy and great to see you no matter what time of the day. And they're like, hey, what can I get you? And you're like, I have no, like, can you take 20 minutes and run down the menu for me?
Exactly.
It is kind of overwhelming. But here's the other thing. I do believe races and race directors are getting better at publishing what foods and beverages will be at aid stations. So at least we as athletes can be better prepared. It doesn't always guarantee it's going to be there in the amounts that you want. So you should always be prepared. But you know, back to my story, like I've notably grabbed, and I don't know why this keeps happening. Well, I do know, because you know, when you're X amount of hours in an ultra, you're not really thinking too clearly. And you go to an aid station, and if you don't have a pacer with you, you're trying to make these decisions for yourself. And what may look good is not going to digest well most of the time, right? And then, you know, you hit the trees, you hit the porta potty. I mean, you know, and then you're like, wow, I shouldn't have done that. But here's the thing, as you do 100 or 150 or 200 miles or more, you don't learn your lesson. Let me just say that, because you are so tired, right? You're not making good choices. So you're going to do the same exact thing in the next aid station because you're not going to remember, right? What happened?
Well, unless you have extreme issues, you may not even make it to the next aid station or thereafter.
True.
And now we have the famous DNF coming into the picture, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Which is legit, Bob. I feel like some ultra runners, which, you know, we should look at the data too, but like, I think the DNF rate goes down the longer the event, generally speaking, just because you have more time cushioned in, you know, if you have 100 hours to do a 200 mile race,
right,
then you've got more time to kind of reset your system or take a longer nap, etc.
It's a good point.
I think it would be good to see new data for our DNF rate related to GI distress for the 200 mile events, because I think, well, anyway, it's just a curiosity here.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good lesson. I think if we lump it up for our listeners, you know, look at races, if we're talking about ultra running races, look at anywhere from 50K to 100 miles. Like, there's subset A, there's group A, and then 1 to 200 miles is B, and then over 200 miles is C. And I think what you're saying, Dina, is shorter ultra running races, you may have a higher risk of GI distress because there's more of a time pressure on you, right? And you need to be moving faster, which we know does not sit well with digesting any sort of food for the most part. But the longer you go, like you said, well, the slower you're probably going, and the more opportunity you have to eat solid food and digest it at the same time. Now, of course, there are some outliers there, but no, I like that. I think that's some great opportunities for future research, especially since we're seeing more of these 200 plus races pop up.
What about hydration, Bob, on the current situation? Like, we still have water, we still have soda.
Yeah.
I mean, I am also seeing more of some energy drinks, you know, like your Red Bull kind of thing.
Yep. And that then, is super popular.
Yeah. And then the hydration engineered formulations as well, which kind of coincide with the sponsorship opportunities.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely, I mean, you've covered, I think, 98% of it. I want to provide my feedback on one other drink, but two, I just want to go back to the energy drinks really quick. I have seen many, many individuals ruin their ultra races by consuming too much of those. Because remember, a lot of those have about 200 milligrams of caffeine per can. If they're giving you the full can or if it's just a cup, you have to titrate that. But a lot of people can't actually handle that much caffeine at once. So you just, you know, just remember, listeners, if you do that, like a lot of times when we consume caffeine, it's kind of, you know, I call it drip feeding, right? It's not a high amount at any one time. To maybe 75 milligrams at one time, but now you're drinking a Red Bull or whatever at 200 milligrams, and that's going to tear up the gut a little bit, right? Especially later in the race. So right. That's one thing. The other drink that I am seeing a lot of is pickle juice, literally pickle juice, right? In a jar or in cups. And that's sometimes a breath of fresh air for a lot of people, including myself, right? It tastes great most of the time. So that I would just add that to the drinks. But I agree with you. I think most of the sport nutrition hydration products is all based on the product sponsorship of that race these days.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing those partnerships have to be upheld from the race director. And it's like the only product that they're allowed to use other than like a water, pickle juice, or, you know, maybe an energy drink, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, I guess adding in like the coffee thing for the longer, you know, 24 plus hour events. But I think that was there classically. More options, but kind of going with the caffeine theme, like, ooh, we got to be careful because, well, and also, Bob, I might just complain that some of that coffee isn't really that good.
Oh my God, I was just going to say that. It's like, listen, listeners, you're not going to drink a cup of coffee on the trail to enjoy it. Mm-mm. They're like, you're drinking it for a purpose. And usually the taste is, I don't even know how to describe it other than just dirt. Like, I remember one race, I drank a cup and I was like, oh my God, I almost threw up because it was so disgusting. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm just using this to get caffeine to help my central nervous system. Like, that's all I'm doing.
Right.
You're not putting some sugar and cream in it.
I mean, maybe we were a little coffee snob. Oh, you might be a coffee snob more than you realize.
I probably am, but it was like really bitter tasting.
Yeah,
like, I just remember, but see, here's the thing too, depending on the aid station and the gear that they can hike in or drive in, right? Because to your point earlier, there are some aid stations that are very remote, and those remote aid stations will not be brewing you fresh cups of coffee. I mean, they're using instant coffee, right?
This is so true.
You kind of have to, as athletes, we kind of have to look at that course map, look at where the aid stations are. And if they don't say it, you kind of have to deduce, oh, that one, it's, you know, they're not going to be able to get in, right? You know, like Leadville, they've got to pack the llamas to get up to Hope Pass. You're not going to expect, although they do an awesome job at the top of Hope Pass. I don't know how they do it repeatedly, but kudos to them. But you just, usually you don't expect a lot of great nutrition on those very, very far out aid stations.
I mean, we should just give a minute of love to all the race directors and all of their volunteers,
amazing.
That are doing amazing, and just the progression of like trying to keep the athletes well-fueled and hydrated. I mean, there's a lot of great RDs out there, Bob. So
yeah,
hugs and love.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, I think, you know, I wanted to add one more thing from the electrolyte perspective. You know, we're still on the now, like what's happening now. I have seen repeatedly at races, like literally bowlfuls of electrolyte capsules or tablets, just bowls. Like they look like bowls of cereal, but the cereal is capsules, which is great. And it's not so great because you don't know what you're getting sometimes. And like, you don't know, like maybe you're not training with that product. I mean, I know one electrolyte capsule has 40 milligrams of sodium. I know another has 200. So how, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to know unless the bottle's there or whatever? So I would just, listeners, I would be careful if you do see that bowl of electrolyte capsules or tablets. I probably would recommend just sticking with your own at that point and just letting that sit on the table, because that is probably in emergency times only is something you would want to use.
I agree, Bob. And just letting your intuitive self, like if you are wanting the Pringles or the pickle juice, like kind of like leaning on that a little bit more versus a random capsule or whatever that you haven't had before.
Yeah. Well, Dina, let's look into our crystal ball. Let's do some predictions for future ultra running aid stations. I'm going to start. I have one ready.
Yeah.
This is on the food thing, on the calories. So I am predicting that some races, certainly not all, but some races, we're going to see the registration fee go quite high. And it's going to be a customized race nutrition for each athlete who is registered, meaning you, Dina, will be able to order, custom order what you want at every aid station. And they will, and you'll have to obviously predict the time that you'll be in there, but they're going to basically run a cook to order, and they're going to all based on what you want at every aid station. That's my first looking in the crystal ball.
I mean, will we be able to order on our phone, like via an app, like 5 miles ahead,
or it'll probably be something with a spot tracker because some of these races are pretty remote, right?
Oh,
but no, that's the thing. I think we're going to see that. We're going to see thousands of dollars entry fee, but we're also going to see, okay, what do you want at aid station one? Here are your choices. You know, what do you want at aid station two? Here are your choices. I wouldn't put it past any race directors in the future.
I mean, you're blowing some minds right now. And I think rolling some eyes out there,
exactly.
Like Uber Eats here,
yes,
at mile,
yes,
45 or something, like,
yeah,
just deliver,
yeah,
it to me on the trail, Bob.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Right. And the Uber Eats delivery people are going to be ultra runners, like the real, the stud and the studettes out there.
Oh.
Those are the ones that are going to be delivering it to us on their backs, right? Because they're going to run it in.
I mean, this is dreamland now.
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yowza. I wonder what's going to happen with the sponsorships, Bob, because I feel like the money that these races need to operate well and pay all of their fees, make their money as well. Like, I don't feel like the sports nutrition product is going away, but I feel like it is maybe potentially not going to get any bigger than it is. We're still going to have a lot more of that whole food option, but I don't know. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. I think based on what we're seeing just in the economy now, I think a lot of the sport nutrition companies are going to still keep their, okay, we've done this in the past in terms of monetary, sponsorship. But I think what sport nutrition companies are going to do is they're going to step up a little bit and they're going to say, well, we'll provide our drink at these aid stations, our bar at these aid stations, our gel at these aid stations. So I think they're going to offer more in kind versus monetary, which may be good unless you're not used to that product. And that's the thing, right? That's where I think Whole Food is really going to trump this, is because not all of the athletes are going to be training with XYZ products. So then you don't know what it's going to do with your guts. And that's where I think we're going to go more toward that Uber Eat Whole Food kind of a thing still.
Yes, Bob. I'm also just thinking of the ultra runners that are fairly experienced. Okay. And so let's say they have 3+ ultras on their race calendar. Mm-hmm. And let's say those 3 races, and they're more in the 100K to maybe 200 mile distance. Like, do they change their nutrition training to accommodate each race that they're doing for the sport nutrition specifically?
That would be interesting, right? So then they don't have to carry it. Now I see where you're going. Yeah. Because a lot of these guys and girls travel light. I mean, super light.
Super light.
I was just going to say, some of them actually train their gut to be able to assimilate and digest many different types of products.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I don't know how much they can get away with that. Unless it's like a similar product, like the similar sugars, or what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of my people, my ultra runners. They tend to just stick with, if it is engineered products, like, just stick with what works and don't change. And so we'll just be more self-reliant.
Yeah. Exactly.
For those races, like, oh, well, they're not offering that product I use. So I'm going to stick with what I know, even though I have to carry it or have my crew bring it.
Yeah. Which kind of leads me into the whole in the future too. I think we're going to see even more of an uptick in metabolic efficiency training. So teaching the body how to use more of those fat stores for energy and preserve those carbohydrates, because here's the thing, and you just nailed it. The more we need to rely on our nutrition, the more adapted to using our stores of fat we want to be, so we carry less, unless you have the opportunity to have a crew. And here's the other thing. You need to have access to your crew. Like, some of these races, you don't see them for too long, it's sometimes hours and hours and hours in between. So I just think, you know, and my thing is, as you know, Dean, has always been improving a person's ability to improve, you know, their fat burning response. So you just, you can carry less. And, you know, we've seen it happen before, but, you know, nobody wants to take a, you know, a 30 liter backpack on their back and carry it over 100 plus miles. I mean, we just, it's just ridiculous, right?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, something be said for that.
You want to know my other prediction, my crystal ball?
Okay.
Okay, this is totally future, like, you know, Jetsons future, but you know, obviously we're living in the Jetsons days now. For those of you who don't know who the Jetsons are, I just completely dated myself, and that's okay.
Stay with us. Google
the Jetsons. Anyway, I see this is, I don't know, maybe if it's part of my hope or not, but I see that aid stations will have sport dietitians who will be monitoring athletes. Right. So now we might be taking some body weight measurements to determine fluid loss. We might, you know, obviously part of this is the athletes will need to work with some sport dietitians so they know where the heck they're starting. But I just see a little bit more concierge customization in some of these races where maybe now we get some of the you and I's of the world and not on crews anymore, but maybe actually at these aid stations helping the race directors. You know, basically have a higher success rate and higher finish rate by providing these athletes what they need.
I've thought of that as well, Bob. I mean, you've got your medical person at the aid and your foot person, you know, and then you might have like the volunteer coordinator. So you have all these resources or your, you know, just FAQ kind of individual for that person leading the aid station. So wouldn't it make sense to have other support, meaning nutrition kind of point of contact?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I've said this before, Dee, and probably to wrap it up, unless you have some more to, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. The number one limiter to finishing an ultra run is not physical. And it's not as much mental, although that is still a big component. It's nutritional, right? If your stomach goes bad, or if you're not getting the things you need, I don't care how much in shape you are. I don't care how strong-willed you are or motivated. You will not be finishing that race, right? So nutrition really is the pinnacle of being able to finish these races, right? Yeah. So that's where the bias comes out. And I'm like, yeah, that's where I'd love to see sport dietitians at these aid stations.
Although everyone listening, don't wait for the Jetson era to happen. I mean, hire your sport dietitian in advance. Don't wait, because we don't know if that's going to happen, Bob. So let's just be more proactive. And just as much as we put into our training, we should equally or even more so, like you're saying, put into our nutrition training.
Absolutely.
So that we're not panicking last minute.
Yes. I know. So, well, I was just going to go off on a tangent, but I'll save it for next time, Dee. I think what I'd like to leave with is, listeners, we probably piqued your interest a little bit, and you're like, oh my gosh, I have so many questions for Bob and Dina now. And that's good, because here's what we want you to do. We want you to send us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. And here's the thing, ask us anything. I mean, it could be ultra running nutrition, it could be anything, but we will turn your questions into a complete Ask Us Anything episode in the future. And we love these because we love hearing from all of you. So please reach out to us, check out our website for all of our show notes, and we will see you on the next episode. Thanks for listening. And Dina, thanks for your time as always.
All right, Bob. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Well, thanks for joining us for episode 125, where Dean and I chatted about the past, present, and future of ultra marathon aid stations. Fantastic episode. Hopefully you thought so also, and especially if you are an ultra runner or thinking about being an ultra runner, because you definitely have to be prepared and know what will be served at these wonderful aid stations. Now, next week's episode, we are going to sit down with a good colleague of mine, Tobias Christensen. He is the head of performance nutrition at Morton. So if you've not heard of it, you'll definitely want to listen to this episode. And if you are using Morton products, you're definitely going to want to listen to this episode to learn more about it, because we're talking about the Morton Hydrogel, a little bit of the science behind it, how it came about, what it does in the body, what athletes are benefiting more from using Morton products, so on and so forth. So definitely don't miss that. If you do have a sport nutrition related question, or if you're feeling like, you know what, it'd be really cool if Bob and Dina interviewed so-and-so-and-so, let us know. Shoot us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. Let us know your question. Let us know this person you'd like us to get a hold of and try to interview on our podcast. We would absolutely love to do that. Now, also head on over to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com, where you can find show notes, you can find our partner discounts, and you can find just kind of what we're up to with the podcast. We would also love it if you kind of visited your podcast platform of choice and gave us a 5-star rating, give us a review. It just kind of helps spread the love with other people around the world. Now, if you would like more information about what Dina and I do in our respective businesses, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com. That is Dina's website. And head on over to energyperformance.com. That's energyperformance.com. And to see what I am up to. We certainly appreciate it. And both of us have some great courses. I've got a certification for health professionals. We've got some great things going on, not just nutrition coaching. So you definitely want to explore what Dina and I are up to in our respective businesses. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.